Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Bad Batch Report. That is wonderful. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and the person making the wonderful sound effects of the beautiful mouth music, that is Ken Napsok.
Me and beautiful mouth music go hand in hand. Happy to be here.
What a great image, hand in hand with mouths. That I really liked the little bit of intro music you did there. It definitely had a little bit of a Western standoff vibe, but it also sounded a little bit like the music from that old BBC version of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, you're speaking my language. Everyone knows Hitchhiker is one of my favorite things. And yes, I enjoy that. That's good. That's a good pull. Good pull, sir.
Yeah, yeah. But in relation to Bad Batch, definitely a great Western showdown there. So that's what we're going to get into. This episode has a lot, including a terrifying, very Western showdown. We are discussing episode 8 of The Bad Batch. It is called Reunion. It is written by Christian Taylor, directed by Stuart Lee. And I should start sharing this credit almost every episode. There's a story editor credit, a story editor, Matt Machenovitz. And this episode was about 26 minutes, Ken, and According to some of the people who worked on the show and are tweeting it out, we are at the halfway point of the show. Right. So it looks like that 16 episodes quote that's been floating around is indeed accurate. How are you feeling about that?
I as expected, right? So it's like we're hunkered down in this Bad Batch bunker, and I'm enjoying the ride, and I like that. I like that I don't feel rushed, and I don't mind the modern TV season length, right? I know you and I and others grew up on the 23-episode broadcast television runs. So Game of Thrones, obviously, I love 10 episodes. I got 7 and 6 towards the end. People did feel rushed, obviously. I love this. I love that here we are, a midpoint of a big story. That's an important thing for screenwriting, right? And so this episode had that feel. It really did work.
Absolutely. I think it is significant that this is longer episodes and just a longer amount of our time as humans because of it than we are used to for a lot of things. Certainly like broadcast television is still a lot of times those seasons are longer. But yeah, we're used to 10, maybe 12. But 16 is, I did have that emotional reaction of like, wow, we're right in the middle of this story. A big, eventful, horrible thing happened, right? It's totally to be expected for the middle of a story. But then to think like, and I'm still going to be in this story in like August.
No, like, you know, my my fiance, my partner, Grace, like, she loves on Netflix these foreign dramas from all around the world, murder dramas. It's a lot of shooting, sex would make superheroes blush. I just hear it as I walk through the living room. And then she'll come and she'll be like, I'm so upset. I'm like, why? She's like, it's only 6 episodes and it ended. And I'm like, oh, well, Bad Batch, it's going 16, huh? Come join Bad Batch.
And you'll hear different things. Anyway, gonna leave that alone and move on to our overall reactions. Ken, did you love this episode, like it, struggle with it? What'd you think?
Hot damn. Can I do that on Force Center? We don't do that much. Hot damn.
Hot damn.
Hot damn indeed. Coming off episode 7, which was my favorite so far, this is already being talked about as one of the best of the season and one of the best Star Wars episodes in a while, at least some of the chats I'm seeing, particularly in our Discord here on Force Center. I mean, what can't you talk about? I mean, great tension, character comedy, things I've really never seen before in Star Wars. That's just a great template for a good Star Wars story, no matter what the medium is. And I do believe this episode is going to be talked about for a while. This is me one of those sitting around a bar, Star Wars Celebration 31, and going, hey, remember the episode 8? Mortis arc, Clone Wars, the Fives arc, and that episode 8 and Reunion. Oh, Bad Batch, loved it.
Yeah, no, I think instant classic. Yeah, I'll go that far. I really did love this episode. I think it really works great. It is its own self-contained episode, but it works so well paying off a lot of the ideas and emotions and plot that they've built up. Yeah. And I think sometimes when an episode kind of pops like this, it's because exactly as you're saying, it's that great Star Wars tradition of new and old where there's many kind of familiar ideas, but then kind of some new things that we haven't seen as much. And this episode felt like, to me, just an extremely deadly bottle episode.
Yeah.
You know, there's that phrase of the bottle episode for, you know, when characters are in a confined space. Sometimes it originally was created, you know, for budget reasons of like, we can't leave the set. So they're going to be stuck in this room. This was very much an emotional bottle episode of they kind of can't get out of this space, this bit of history. So I think that gave it this great energy of wasn't quite Haunted House, wasn't that level of or that kind of horror, but it gave it that sort of feel. And then, you know, obviously there's a lot of great returning faces. And I was just really tickled that like this is the return of all of our favorite characters who chew on toothpicks.
A lot of toothpick chewing.
There's a lot of Crosshair and Cad Bane. Bad Batch is just going to wake up at night just in terror of anyone chewing on a space toothpick because it means just horror for them.
And I'm thinking of that Star Wars Darth Vader toothpick dispenser that Steve Sansweet has up there in his collection that just Vader reaches over and hands you a toothpick. Wonder if they have that in their collections, Crosshair and Cad Bane.
I think they're going too soon. They got to get all that Vader propaganda out there to terrify the galaxy. You touched on this as well. I just think that there was such a great mix of action. There was some of like my favorite action moments so far in this show. There was a lot of comedy for a dark episode where there are high stakes. Wrecker was like back. It was it almost felt like a mission of like, well, now that we've gone through this little arc of Wrecker's trauma, look, he's back. He's making jokes. He loves bombs. He can hit his head again, and it's just fun. Yep. It doesn't break him. So there's a lot of action, a lot of comedy, and then just that great depth of character, clarity in plot and motivations. I think things that were kind of, oh, yeah, that's probably what it is, and that probably makes sense, were just kind of laid out much more clearly in this episode, I thought. Of
yeah.
It's the Kaminoans or Kaminoans who are sending out the bounty hunters to try to get Omega back alive. And of course, the Empire sending out the deadly Crosshair with his few proto stormtroopers and clones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So any other overall thoughts before we dive into the big ideas?
I'd love to get to the big ideas, but the final thing I just wrote, now we're going places, which is, you and I remember we've talked about midpoints before, just a basic screenwriting term and an approach, and just this episode definitely has that feel with the 16 episode arc, and just, I really feel the page turn, and we're going places now in this story, and I'm excited.
Yeah, absolutely. It is really pointing at the runway, and it is flying off. And I really like that. I don't know exactly what it's going to be. Is it going to be for the rest of the season or most of the season, Omega is separated? Or is it going to be they're going to get her back next episode? I don't know, and I love that.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
All right, let's get into the big themes and ideas. What did you feel was really at stake in this episode?
I love this idea. I think it was the band Fastball that had the song The Way. Anyone can see the road that they walk on is paved in gold. I put down the path and the way. A lot of talks about path, journeys, and even the a literal looking for the path out of the cruiser. So there's that thing, which to me also rolls in this theme of teamwork and connection. Literally a shot of everybody grabbing a bomb and working together, and bad things happen when they're separated and not working together. So there you go. Kenny Clone Wars coaching point is also in this one as well.
Nice. Yeah, I think for me, I'm really on the same page with you about this idea of paths. In particular, what really jumped out to me is this idea of escaping your past or, you know, going on a different path that really gets framed by this little ongoing debate between Hunter and Echo, right? Of we know from previous episodes that Hunter wants to make a change. You know, the second episode, he sought out Cut Quain to say, we kind of got to keep our heads down. How do you do that? And Cut suggested, well, you have to be something different. You have to evolve. And then Hunter's kind of acting that out by going, well, what we need right now is to just be something different. We need to basically rob our own past, take this armory off this ship that we're all very familiar with, or ships of this type, pay off Sid, and be something different that Hunter himself doesn't seem quite willing to put a name to. Yeah. And Echo is pushing back and saying, we're soldiers, not arms smugglers. And that comes up a couple times, this idea of kind of Echo wanting to have gone with Rex, because that's a little bit more continuing in a slightly different way on their true identity, on their true path, and Hunter wanting to find something new. So they've already got that tension between them about going forward. Can you change kind of what you are, who you are? And then so much of this great action-packed episode is just, I feel like the ideas are just physically in the space and what's happening to them, right? That they literally can't escape a Jedi cruiser that is a symbol of their past. They're trying to make it out, and sometimes weighed down by these weapons of their past, right? The fact that they can't get out as efficiently as they normally could is in a large part because Crosshair knows their moves, right? This is like their own past, their own tactics coming back to haunt them, you know?
All wonderful stuff here. Yeah, down to the little moments. Some of my favorite moments when we start breaking down those moments a little bit later on, second half of the show, but Omega looking out over the wreckage, and you really, the great funny moment, a character comedy moment follows, but right, what you're saying, literally their past is there. We're in the ruins of the past. Wrecker, proton torpedo. I love proton torpedoes. I mean, just everything around it, but leading into this Crosshair thing, you know, you could honor or say, I should say, he's on his the wrong path, and issues into, you know, how much control he has over that. We know still to come, but I love what you're saying about the past really just being this wrecked iron prison.
Yeah, that they just can't get out of. And I really even like the through line with the thermal bombs. You know, there's that great contrast right at the beginning where the episode starts with a sense of doom and foreboding, right? That's if you watch with the subtitles before you even see anything, it's the, you know, thunder rumbling and lightning cracking on Kamino. Yeah. And then there's this real contrast when we go to Braca, which is not, you know, exactly a vacation spot, but the way Braca is portrayed right at the beginning when Wrecker is teaching Omega with these bombs, there's a beam of sunlight on them. The subtitles say birds singing. You know, there's a real contrast of what they could be versus kind of where they came from.
It's a Sunday morning on Braca.
It's a Sunday morning on Braca, and Uncle Wrecker is teaching the youngins about bombs.
Yeah.
But part of what I really liked about that is the bombs become the symbol of passing on what you know of the next generation, of, you know, bonding after Wrecker and Omega bonding after what they went through last episode. And then in Hunter's eyes, those bombs are currency to sell to Cid. He's trying to kind of turn them into something different, but they end up being trapped and using them exactly as they've always used those bombs, you know, as actual explosive devices, as objects of war to escape this newest problem.
Yeah, and that ties into something that's really interesting to me, and maybe it moves into the bigger perspectives of Star Wars. But you know, the conversation between Hunter and Echo, that you're right, is ongoing. Just Rex is on his own path. We literally hear that, and I and you touched upon it, but I love that Hunter's maybe not ready for that path. We feel he might be, but he has a path. Omega is, as he said several times, seems to be where his path has taken him in terms of protecting or saving her. But Echo wanting to follow Rex. But I also interpret it as just kind of being stuck on being a soldier. So the questions of how do you go forward? When is it right to go forward? And now you got bombs literally going, we can't go forward with them. We have to use them as we always did. That stuff was all through this episode for me.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's what's also really interesting about this episode is it didn't feel like it was putting any sort of thumb on the scale of is Echo right, is Hunter right? It's really a picture of their wrestling with how to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And there's been a lot of times in this season where, you know, I don't know, I get really excited for themes, Joseph, that are about tough choices that you have to make and no right answers. I'm always like, yes, and it's not clear which way is the best yet. I love that stuff.
Yeah, it's not clear yet. Or there's maybe multiple paths forward and you have to choose the one that is right for you. Or, yeah, I like that it is. There's some beautiful, beautiful ambiguity. Mm-hmm. Last thing for me on this sort of escaping your past idea, I even felt here we go with some Cad Bane talk. Don't worry, there'll be a plenty. There's even a little bit of that with his line to Hunter of I've taken down so many clones over the years. Once you figure out one, the rest are easy. And, you know, it's a great Hunter line of like, you know, no, we're not regs. We're the Bad Batch, you know. Yeah. So Hunter pushes back of like, no, we're unique and you're going to figure that out. But still, things don't go great for Hunter.
No,
in that particular instance, but Cad Bane's line really does have that, like, you can't escape what you are.
Mm-hmm. You can't. Yeah. And there's some other path type of themes going for me that Lamassu and LSA represent, like the Kaminians trying to stay on their own path. I mean, we start the first line you really hear is Rampart being upset that, you got to tell me anything around here. And they got a contingency plan. I love, but this title reunion, right? This, reunited and it doesn't feel so good kind of theme literally is to be this old paths and new paths together. And I love that Crosshair is really holding their quote new path or their new history they're building over them. He's belittling them about look at what you've become type of thing.
Yeah.
And we know he's again, under certain amount of control from that chip. I get that, but I just love that part of it too, of, you know, even Crosshair is like, you can't escape your past. I know who you are. Look at you silly little boys trying to move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really great because there is like a wrestling with if they're not soldiers, what is their noun? You know, because Echo pushes back and says, you know, we're not arms smugglers. And then Crosshair calls them scavengers, which apparently in Star Wars, I think is just a horrific insult. We obviously know it is a thing that plenty of people do, but the way scavenger is always said, it feels like it should be bleeped out the way Star Wars characters say it to one another.
Or scavenger scum is the punk band we need to start now because it's great.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on paths? That's a great way to process it all.
Yeah, but just yeah, summarizing it for me, of just putting it all into a cruise. You're right to invoke the bottle episode kind of trope there on a major level. And again, for me, really connected with this, like when they get out or start to get out when they're all working together. And then when they're separated, bad things are happening. So a great, powerful connection theme as well in Star Wars. But just all these various paths out of your past, all in a wrecked. I said iron earlier. I said Durasteel. Be more correct. Prison. I love this.
Yeah, no, you're right. That is a great theme that they start to, that the Bad Batch, even with all of their funny bickering and some absolutely killer funny bickering in this episode, mm-hmm. that they are at their best when they work together and use all their skills to complement one another. And when they come apart, mm-hmm. when they are not in a point of reunion, things go even worse for them. It's a great perspective. Another big theme for me that I wanted to touch on is I felt like just the idea of war was kind of under the microscope, particularly the romance of war or the fun of adventure versus kind of the horror and the reality. And that's this great tension that's always present in Star Wars, right? Because it's called Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And a part of the thrill of it is an adventure serial. And a part of the thrill of it is we get to see people fight with laser swords and blow things up. But then also Star Wars often I think it is arguing for pacifism and the idea of we're all connected and let's avoid violence if at all possible. So that's one of the tensions that makes Star Wars interesting to me. And I think it was really present in this episode that we're starting with a literal image and idea of let's avoid explosions from Wrecker of all people, of Wrecker training Omega to defuse bombs. And then you mentioned this moment already, but it's really highlighted when Omega looks out at just these horrible scraps, these, you know, all these machines of war that have fallen apart are going to be recycled into other machines of war, most likely. And there's almost a sense, I thought, of like romance, right? Because she hasn't seen much at all. And she's looking out at just this devastation. And it's like, what was the war like? And you almost, it's right on the edge for me of like, what is she thinking? Is she trying to figure out like, is it fun or is it scary or is it somewhere in between? It feels like she's trying to process that and gets that very funny response from Tech, but kind of she frames that question of what is war really like? Mm. And she doesn't really get an answer from Tech, but then I think she's really getting one through her experiences here, right? We see moments of romance and fun. You know, she gets to use her crossbow and take down some dudes, you know, and she has that fun line about, I've never been inside an ion engine before. So there's those moments of like coming of age, adventure, fun. But then this episode is constructed, shot, written in a way to emphasize horror, right? When they're trying to get through to Crosshair and he's like, aim for the kid. And, you know, they doubt, like, is Crosshair really going to incinerate us? He's that far gone. And like, well, we have no choice. So we got to fight back. And they really make sure that we understand that Crosshair's injuries are ghastly. Mm-hmm. And then after Hunter gets shot by Cad Bane and is regaining consciousness, that great helmet shot, that great perspective from Hunter where there's no glory, there's no fun. That's horror, right? Of I'm barely awake. I'm barely okay. Am I going to make it? Is everybody else going to make it? So there's this real mix of offering to question, what is a war like? In moments of kind of coming of age, adventure serial fun, in moments of absolute grisly horror.
Yeah, you were touching on what I really loved about this Omega moment, and you're making it mean even more for me. So thank you, number one. Two, it stood out to me for a lot of reasons. We've got the wide-eyed wonder of Omega that's running all the way through it. I love that you also brought in the ion engine chamber moment too. So that's part of what's going on with her. She's a sponge soaking up all these experiences, and it's charming and our word of the season, endearing with Omega. But I wondered too, because we as a viewer are almost looking out and seeing those things alive again. I love being on the bridge of the Star Destroyer, and just I even flash back to like Yularen and all those things we as fans know the Clone Wars. So I had that romance to it. And there is some of that, right? There is some. I'm thinking of Rex in season 7 and the tough questions of, you know, without us, without the war, us clones don't exist. And so it's this weird thing that's wrapped in all those kind of heavy things, the romance things. And I thought it was a perfect use of Tech to have him just be like, war is a series of missions and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's it. not that there that is truly it, but just that it kind of it was a, dare I say, a slap in the face of the dreaming of the death and destruction of war.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's a great moment just because it is honestly his perspective, right? It's a yeah. funny joke, but it's one of those things where we can laugh at it because we understand it from the outside. But, you know, he is kind of telling Omega, like, I don't process it emotionally. And yeah. then, of course, Omega is going to, most likely.
Yeah. 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 So, there's a lot to that moment. It was we always talk about comedy of character, but that just what that means is there's purpose with the humor. You're communicating with the humor as a writer. You're telling the moment, you're telling the thing, and then so that works for you. That hit me on that level. It just because I, again, looking out the window with Omega was probably seeing things that she was thinking she was seeing, you know, about what it was.
What was it when these giant ships actually were blasting through the sky? Yeah.
And I'm not saying she is just thinking, oh, war sounds great. I'm not saying that, but just. And there's positive things to take out of what everyone's learned from each other and the adventures and the connection, all these things that we also love in Star Wars. So I think that's there too, but it was a specifically poignant moment.
Yeah. And I think that's maybe the power of this for me, because it speaks to that tension I love in Star Wars of the action and the thrill is, of course, just fun for us as an audience. It's natural and good mm-hmm. that we want to watch conflict, to process ideas of conflict and just enjoy it. As viewers. And then for characters, it's often just this metaphor of this crucible of adventure and challenge that we have to go through to become our best selves. And I think that's why the coming of age story keeps being so popular and important in Star Wars. And you get these great moments in here where you get to see Omega processing both like the necessity of facing your challenges and finding a way through and finding joy within dark times. And then Omega having to, unlike Tech, really emotionally face horror, including right. her own abduction by the end.
Oh, yeah. And there's a real horrific half beat later on we can talk about with her and Cad Bane that it really hit me in a way I wasn't expecting. So great stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So any other thoughts on this episode in particular? Do you want to move on to how some of the ideas in this episode reflect a larger storytelling and perspective of Star Wars?
Yeah, let's look at that larger van mural of Star Wars.
Let's pull the van up and study the mural. What do you got?
Took a big swig of electrolytes, folks. Here we go. So there's this, you mentioned the Hunter line. I wrote it down. In our present situation, we need money. I added the all caps on need. And we have a chance to make a lot of it right here. And this is in response to stuff going on with him and Echo in this ongoing conversation, stuff that, you know, the choice that Rex left them with, which you and I both highlighted of, you know, good for Rex. You're either going to get there or not, or your path is your path. I can't force you to join the burgeoning rebellion. I can't do it. Mm-hmm. Very smart of Rex. Part of, I think, the lesson you learned with Cut Laquane back in the Clone Wars show. So I wrote down this idea of like, how are you choosing your path is important to me. We always talk about how you fight wars, but are you letting circumstances dictate it? And that's a lot of what is in Hunter's voice to me. I think he knows maybe he has to move forward. He knows there's something else. He's definitely on board the Omega thing. I think that's a correct decision and an important decision to change him and change all of them. Are you moving forward on your own? Are you truly finding your path? This all made me think of the prequel era Jedi, where circumstances really dictated where they went. And some of those circumstances are things that you probably had to get involved in. And maybe once you start, you have to keep going. All those kind of big questions. It just made me think of those kind of big themes about how you choose that path is almost just as important, if not more important, than the path.
Yeah, no, I really like what you're saying. My mind went to a similar place. I kind of wrote it down as, you must choose the classic Star Wars theme. Of there's a lot about choice, and there is exactly what you're saying with Hunter. Like he's looking for in this episode kind of the word for it. He knows Omega is the priority in protecting her, but what does that mean then for the rest of the group ultimately? Mm-hmm. What are they going to settle into being? Which is all valid. It's all the path stuff. But then with the Rex and Echo part of it, it becomes very specific to, I think, this time period about. Eventually, you're going to have to choose a side. Either you're going to stand against the Empire, or kind of by ignoring the Empire and just letting it go about its business, you're choosing a side as well. So Echo really makes this very specific argument that they should have gone with Rex, which implies to fight the Empire. Mm-hmm. Echo says, if we left with Rex, we wouldn't have to owe Cid at all. Really highlighting it is it's a different life path, a different choice. Hunter says he's on a different path than us. And Echo says, Hunter, we're soldiers. What other path is there? So that's really about, like, who are we going to be? But it's also, it was meaningful to me because it is Echo very much saying, this Empire is bad. Rex is fighting it. We should continue to be soldiers. We should go and fight the Empire. And Hunter's like, no, we got to do this other thing that I only have partially defined. And in all that, what happens in the episode, the Empire comes for them anyway.
Yes.
So is it a choice or isn't it? The Empire is after them. I know at what point are they going to stop running and turn around and just fight the Empire?
Yeah. Again, how are you choosing your path? Are you going to let the path find you? And that doesn't always work out. Yeah, absolutely. You're 100% right. That Echo stuff. You know, because again, I posed the question up top, you know, hey, is Echo just stuck in who he is? Yeah, we're a soldier that's always got. Now we know the implications are fight the Empire, bigger things, important things that they're now doing, like you said. It just begs that question of just like, don't let anyone else choose for you. Make that choice. It's going to be more powerful.
Yeah. And in some ways it's different, but it evokes Han Solo stuff for me, right? Of I can just get by. I don't have to, the Empire's bad, but I just avoid them, stay out of their way. I don't like them, but I'm not going to turn around and fight them. That's not my thing. And it feels like Hunter is kind of wrestling with that. And Echo's got his, like, I'm ready to put on my jacket with the rebel insignia.
Yeah.
You know, and be a rebel. You know, they're not using those words yet, but that it feels like Echo's already being like, come on. Let's go. Let's do it. Let's fight the Empire.
Yeah, with the Han thing is, if you're not careful, suddenly you find yourself in the Death Star.
Yep. You're fighting the Empire one way or another, so just choose. Any other big themes for you?
That's the one that resonated most for me. Obviously, we keep coming back to these choices and all those kind of things, but just that one really, hey, because you're exactly right. You're taking it into a lot of different areas for the individual, Rebels versus Empire, all these kind of things that are at play in Star Wars. And it was why this episode really resonated for me.
Yeah. I think the other big thing for me that was really effective is this very, very old, very traditional, very good Star Wars theme of fighting your own family, family of origin versus family of choice. You know, a lot of this episode is the horror of Bad Batch fighting their sibling Crosshair, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's why it's called Reunion. It is this, if they wanted a more pulpy title, it would have been like Dark Reunion or Reunion of Doom. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a good reunion. And, you know, they're so intent on protecting Omega and having this devotion to Omega, which I think is right and good and the point of the story and moral and wonderful. But there's this also this tension of they understand the inhibitor chips much better now, right?
Yeah.
They get what's happening to Crosshair more than they did before. And they had even expressed a desire to help Crosshair when they even earlier in the season when they realized this is probably not his choice. And now they know much better from their own personal experience. Really, really probably not his choice. But there's no real, like, they bring up to him that this isn't your choice, right?
Yeah.
But there isn't a real, like, Crosshair, please, let's work together. They just want to protect Omega and escape Crosshair. And it's a real family tension.
So, yeah, especially, yeah, Crosshair going to aim for the kid is, it's not going well.
And then the last thing for me of the kind of just the classic family versus family, sibling versus sibling cycle of violence. Crosshair's injuries being really horrific and causing what looks like could be permanent damage. Mm-hmm. But definitely that old Star Wars language of the scars of war that appear physically on your body are a manifestation of the scars of your choices. That there's a real energy to me of almost like Vader and Obi-Wan of, you know, like the wounds that Obi-Wan inflicts on Mustafar to Vader are horrific. But, you know, did Anakin leave him any choice at all? And it felt the same way with Crosshair of like, he's going to incinerate everyone.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't mean to directly do that to him, but you still have that sort of pathos and that feeling for Crosshair of like, Crosshair's going to be mad that his brothers did that to him. And like, but did they, or did you choose that? It's real Vader, Obi-Wan stuff.
Right there with you on that. And then the added layer that you touched on of just, you know, how much is Crosshair doing this? How much was already there? We've talked about he was always already a little bit of a curmudgeon, right? He was always not the friendliest of the bunch. So what's in there? What's that chip picking up on is one of the little details I might want to explore later on with this. But yeah, it's sad. So there, it's an extra layer of tragedy because now it's could also be what the Empire does to those that follow them.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm very curious to see if it comes back around to the rest of the Bad Batch at some point wanting to rescue Crosshair, wanting to get that inhibitor chip out and see, was any of that you, or was it all the inhibitor chip like we expect?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe they'll like the answer. Maybe they won't. I don't know. I don't know. And I like not knowing.
Yeah. And sometimes be careful what you ask for in Star Wars. You might not like the answer.
Exactly. Any other thoughts on the big old themes before we take a break?
No, the only thing I'll say is this being this all-time instant classic episode, it was so wonderfully narrow focused to me in terms of some of the themes. Like, you would almost think this would be an hour discussion of the first half of our show. I think it was just an economy of scenes, of real specific purpose and direct form of just writing. And that's one of the other reasons I loved it. It didn't cover a lot of ground. It covered the ground they really needed to cover for the show.
Yeah, no, I'll very much agree with that. And add a well said, I think maybe the reason this episode was extra powerful is there are definitely signposts in the dialogue of different ways that a viewer could approach this. But so much of what was powerful about the themes were that they were conveyed just emotionally in the spaces, the choices. It was something that they made you feel these ideas as much as they sort of intellectualized them.
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we are going to both feel and intellectualize some of our favorite moments, the action, the comedy, the canon, that Cad Bane guy we know from other places. We're going to talk about all that in just a moment.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like, what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back to discuss some of our favorite moments from episode 8 of the Bad Batch reunion. We're going to dive into the action moments. Ken, I thought this was a good action episode. How about you?
Sir, I enjoyed the action found in this animated Star Wars program.
In this fine streaming program. What were some of your favorite action moments?
I kind of went all over the place here. I went out of order in my notes. I wrote, to quote a great Gungan warrior, firing up the cannons. I know it's not the exact quote, everybody. No shields here. I really love that particular moment of just like the reaction, the what the cannons actually did, destroying things, but just that first one. And, you know, look, hey, these poor clones, I don't know, again, how much of choice they're having in this matter. I don't know. There's bigger moral questions. No morals in this moment for me. Boom, clones go flying, and Kenny clapped on his couch in the morning.
Yeah, no, that was one of the best action moments. And I think maybe why the action and even the emotions of this episode felt elevated to me, because it was really fulfilling the promise of the premise of the Bad Batch of like, we do things in unconventional ways. And some of our unconventional tricks, crap, they're not working because Crosshair knows. Like, okay, well, we'll make some other ideas up in the moment based on the environment, you know? And yeah, the firing there, having that fear of like, but that's going to collapse the whole room. Like, exactly.
Yeah.
And just the scale of it and the horror of it and the chaos of it and the cleverness of it. It's so great.
Yeah. Yeah. I also enjoyed Wrecker tossing the proton bomb, but then I wrote pretty much Wrecker throwing anything is a win and yelling direct hit. It's fun.
Yeah, no, that is an absolute great one. It's a perfect a bit of I really wrestled with action or comedy for that one because, yeah. You know, we set up how much he loves proton torpedoes. It's a weird, great comedy moment. He's so back to himself, like feels great. Headache's gone. I'm Wrecker, 110% Wrecker through this whole episode. But then just the absolute blunt, crude. Don't load it anything. Don't find some clever way to manipulate the technology like tech. Just heave a proton torpedo and then yell direct hit. Yeah, so good. Yeah, and for me, that was a great toss, but I slightly prefer Wrecker just straight up tossing clones out of that window or the hole in the cruiser. The one that he just picks up and heaves, then slams the other on the ground and gives him a heave. And the second one who falls, there's this great scream.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the wonderful team of sound editors, designers who work on Star Wars have said, yep, people recognize the Wilhelm scream too much and it takes people out of the moment. So we're phasing it out. But we got another scream that people will find eventually that we're adding. And just the way that was shot, and that scream being pretty distinctive. There's a part of me is like, could that be the new Wilhelm? Is this a clue? Did they put it in a really prominent space so we could find it other places?
I love that idea. Yeah, I've been waiting to kind of identify it. So that could be the one. What do we think it was taken from? Some Filoni walking into the break room and not finding any Heinz ketchup because he's from Pittsburgh? Is that?
Yeah, no, I think it is. Yeah, I think it's someone in the design department tripping. I think it's maybe it's Matthew Wood stubbing his toe. I don't know.
Great call.
Yeah, so who knows? But man, yeah, the tossing, the just chucking. And we should, as we're talking about all the action, note that, yeah, most of these baddies are clones, yeah. But those three prototype stormtroopers are there too, the ES-234.
Right. I love that, actually. I love that.
Yeah, yeah. So what else you got for action moments?
Omega shooting action when she pulls the bow out. Like, I she's in it. And this has been a progressive thing, right? She's just learning. She's getting the weapons. She's learning how to defuse bombs or set buffs, all those things. And I'm still waiting for that Omega armor. I'd love to, maybe a hat, like a ball cap, some layer of protection because she's in a war. But I did enjoy her just playing. Oh, yeah, that's right. I got a weapon and I'm in this.
Yeah. No, that was really, really great to see her actually be a part of the team, too. They've done such a great job of that. I've said that kind of week after week that they start the first couple episodes getting rid of those. Hey, should a kid be in this danger zone, with the kid being like, no, this is where I want to be. Respect my choice.
Mm-hmm.
And just continuing that connection of like, she's going to learn, she's going to grow, she's going to be a part of this. And her just whipping out the crossbow and taking down some fellow clones, it makes her a part of this.
Yeah.
At the beginning, even before we get into the great trapped in the cruiser bits, I really liked the little chase with the Bracca scrappers, and in particular, the Bracca scrapper who's escaping, getting shot and slumping over that panel, and then just rolling off the cliff. Is just like, it was just some like great visceral, thrilling action,
And I did like that the next scene that like they're grabbing that guy and person, putting him on the pile there, because I was like, they just killed him in a fantastic fashion.
Yeah, and they're using stun bolts, and like, well, I stunned him. Oh, he went over the cliff. Well, what do? You try.
No, exactly. I was like, hey, for effort, what are you gonna do?
Yeah, but it did. I assume that he's still alive, or they would not have taken the time to tie up his corpse.
Yeah.
In that, it's some great comedy moments in that. But in that action scene, that Wrecker, hits his head when he falls off. And it's so joyous that, the big guy can hit his head again. It's a really weird thing to be happy about. Of like, we can just hit this guy's head as much as we want now. No problem.
Keep it going.
Yeah. Any other moments of action for you that you wanted to focus on?
It's the big ones. The ion engine chamber escape was big time, all caps, big time cinematic tension. I bought into the tension. One of those moments where pretty much think everyone's going to be generally okay in episode 8 of a show. This isn't Game of Thrones, where I'm expecting, tech to be ripped in two or something in some episode that breaks your heart. But who knows anymore? And that's why that whole sequence, the timing, the editing, everyone's just raving about this episode's animation, particularly where, it almost looked live action at times. It was so good. And I just bought into all of the tension. It was really good beat by beat.
Yeah, the ion engine separating was just, yes, everything about it was great. The cleverness of the plan, the teamwork, as you highlighted, the horror of what is going to befall them if the ion engine fires. And then that I was really surprised by is the horror of Crosshair's injuries. And then on top of all that stuff, that's kind of a narrative, is just how great it looked. The shot of the explosions going off in the engine separating, not only did it look like aesthetically beautiful, it was just like framed really well to kind of put it from Crosshair and his team's perspectives of like, holy crap, what did they do? We didn't see this one coming.
Yeah.
And just like this, the size of it, the scope of it. And then the tumbling was really effective too. You could really feel how disorienting that was for Bad Batch, and that they had to keep making these choices of like, well, we can't do a cool move where we take all the bad guys out and are left standing. Everything we can come up with is also kind of horrible to ourselves.
Yeah.
So just so much in that ion engine separating the love.
It was great. I felt like Omega. I was like, oh, I've never really been in here. I mean, I remember Force Unleashed, you get in some chambers. I remember you got to get out of Death Star and whatnot, but it was great. So fun sequence.
Yeah. There was some video game energy, like when they were crawling on the panel and in sliding and and Wrecker was questioning what the word egress means. Like, I felt like I've crawled around in places like this in a video game. I can relate.
I just more and more like I swear to God, I used to have a great vocabulary. Then I moved to LA and got a job in security, and I'm Wrecker now. Wait, egress is the outway, right? That's okay. Got it.
Well, as a security guard, you must have encountered the word egress, right?
Well, yeah, actually, jokes aside, yes, you did. But just, you know, in 17 years, even when you get to the director security spot, you're just, let's just say you're surrounded by some personalities that don't value a lot of words.
Fair enough. They would prefer exit to egress.
Yes.
Got it. Well, let's go on to moments of comedy, whimsy, and weirdness then.
Yes. Let me just say the other one is the Cad.
Oh, please. Yes.
Well, the Cad Bane standoff. I'll highlight particularly his fingers tapping the belt moment. But I do believe, yes, we need Cad Bane chapter of discussion here on the episode. So yes.
Yes, absolutely. The canon lore, we will dive deep into Cad Bane. And yeah, no, if you wanted to take a moment to celebrate the actual action of that scene, by all means, go for
everything
it.
Everything about it. But I mean, I wanted to highlight specifically him tapping his fingers on his the gun belt. We're going to talk about the Western motifs in this. You can't even call them motifs. It was Western.
No. The music was a beautiful and great, but not subtle.
Yes. And I definitely want to talk about that here in a bit, but yeah, I just love that specific moment. And then the horror, you mentioned the horror, when he does get the shot on Omega, there is a beat and just she takes a breath. Michelle Ang takes a breath as Omega. It broke my heart. It just broke my heart. There's no one there to help her. No one there to save her. And she has a second to realize it's about to happen. It just broke my heart. It was a real powerful, effective moment.
It is really powerful, right? Because we've seen her develop this bond with the clones, and we've seen her learn the rules of the squad, right? And you can almost see in that microsecond of like, I can't call anybody. Hunter's down. There's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
This is just going to happen. Yeah. Let me ask you this while we're talking about the Cad Bane action moment in particular.
Mm-hmm.
When you were sitting there watching it the first time, you know, when you're watching something like this the first time and it slows down, did you think that Hunter had a chance, or were you all like Team Cad Bane that Hunter is not going to be able to top Cad Bane in a blaster draw duel?
I think I was so pulled in the moment that I almost was banking on some kind of distraction. Like Boba Fett comes down and Cad Bane shoots him in the helmet and suddenly that deleted scene is back. No, jokes aside, I kind of was so in the moment. I didn't think Hunter, the chances were great. I'm going to assume he's not going to die in that moment. You know what I mean? Unless it's episode 9 of Game of Thrones. So I was pulled in by it. It made me flashback to Red Dead Redemption 1, the first game where you had a lot of duel in there.
Yes.
Hunter, press your red eye button. Press your red eye button.
Yeah, I think that it was maybe just the mood of this episode that did, I think, effectively communicate, hey, here's this bit of sunlight for the Bad Batch at the beginning of the episode, and then it goes away and everything is ominous and doom. Yeah. That felt like this is not going to go well. But also just like, for me, it was the joy of living with some of these characters for a long time and knowing, like, right. Hunter, if you can think of something really clever and outside of the box to do, you might be able to get out of this. But if you're just going to try to outdraw Cad Bane, you're going down, my friend.
No,
and I don't want you to. And that's the way I felt, is like I was begging in my mind in those microseconds for Hunter to do something totally out of the box that would surprise or outside of the box that would surprise Cad Bane. And when he didn't, I was like, that's what happens, Hunter.
Yeah, no,
he's Cad Bane.
Yeah, you touched on kind of maybe what I was feeling of just like, I maybe thought something outside the box was going to happen. Instead, it didn't. And I'm so glad it didn't. Not that I'm rooting against Hunter, but it just that made it a powerful moment. I keep using that term, but it's just like, yeah, you need that oomph, that power, that gut punch, and that worked.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it really plays off of we did good Clone Wars episodes about Cad Bane's first broadcast appearance and his first appearance in actual chronological narrative order in those Clone Wars episodes. But in doing those deep dives, you and I were both really reminded that they discussed the creators of Clone War that Cad Bane was meant to be a reminder that bounty hunters are scary and that he's got to be legitimately scary. And you have to believe that he can take people out. And it was great to see him come back and carry that weight with him, that that was successful. And you believe that as much of a badass as Hunter is, that he's not going to beat Cad Bane at this, because Cad Bane is a true badass.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Powerful stuff. Let's move on to moments of comedy, whimsy, and weirdness then. What do you got there?
Yeah, I enjoyed Wrecker, the whole teaching Omega sequence. Now, personally, I always say I connect to Wrecker in a lot of weird ways. I'm not a prankster. I just despise pranks. It's just playing on people's trust of you and using it against it. It's just one of my least favorite forms of entertainment or comedy. But here in context of the show, him kind of playing that prank, I like, as a former baseball coach, I like coaching with a little bit of pressure of doing it. Like, just get in the box and figure it out. We can talk about it all day, but get in the box, figure it out. So I like that whole sequence, which ends with Wrecker saying, "I'm not crazy," and then unleashing a Homer Simpson crazy laugh from like a Treehouse of Horror, just like, I really love that. And then again, it serves as this light, fluffy cloud before the darkness hits, like you touched upon.
Yeah, no, this is a great moment. And I really like the comedy of him going like, "Gotta choose now, not that one," is really, really great comedy to show character and also to just show a true connection. And it's meaningful after the horror they went through, specifically Wrecker and Omega last week, that he is really trying to prepare her for this is what it's like under tension to do it. Not, I'm not going to teach you with me holding your hand. I'm going to teach you with fear.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Very insightful for old Wrecker. For me, one of my first comedy moments is it's nice and straightforward, but I laughed at Wrecker's, "I've got this under control."
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I would have said that's fine. It's a good comedy line. But the fact that it was screamed quietly as he sped away, clearly not under control.
Yeah. Yeah.
That made it nice. Nice. What's some other moments for you?
I guess we're staying in Wrecker town here. I love the Wrecker trying to force open that door, and Omega just pressing the button. Got it. Comedy character. Again, why is Ken keep saying he's like Wrecker? Go into my house. Me trying to open some kind of device and then Grace just comes up and goes, you just do that. Oh, okay. I do it weekly. So I see myself in Wrecker. Finally, there's a Star Wars character I can connect. Now, I'm kidding. No, Wrecker's great. And then he has this little line. He just kind of mutters about failing his first disarming test. I'm like, yeah. Scars? Like, why is he losing eyes? Did he get taught the same way and it blew up?
I didn't have time to look it up. I don't know, honestly, if there is anything in canon, but it that line felt that way to me of like, is that, did he learn the hard way right away? It's kind of funny if he's like, "Well, I'm ready to begin my journey." Oh, very, very funny. Love yeah. I had the door thing written down too. Cause honestly, I kind of have the opposite of like, if there's a bottle or something I'm trying to open, I always think that there's some level of finesse that I should be able to do like Omega. And I end up like searching for like hidden buttons or tabs or instructions I met. And then my wife's just like, "Here, give it to me." And she just, you know, uses actual strength and brute force. And like, you're meant to, it's the total opposite of this scene. Hey, like there's no secret, pull harder.
Yeah. We have found the right partners for us, sir.
Yes. We can open everything between the two of us. But yeah, that was a great moment. And also I think it is a funny moment for Wrecker, but it also really continues this thing with Omega just being more observant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really, really nice. You know, like that joke would have worked and it would have been fine with Echo or Tech being the one who pushes the button. But there's this, you know, thread with Omega where we're still kind of wondering, you know, exactly what is her purpose? You know, does she have a skill like the rest of the Bad Batch, and the fact that she is very observant keeps popping up in little fun ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
What else you got?
I have the you mentioned it, the everyone sliding down in the engine chamber had real fun vibes to it in the middle of the dark episode. And you said it very up top, just as this dark episode, serious stuff, storm clouds are coming, Annie. And then you had little moments like this all the way through. And that is the template for Star Wars. You can't forget that. And you can never forget that if you're putting together, I don't care if you're doing a fan film or not, Star Wars, that works when it's best when it's that. And I had a big smile. I kind of like sliding down things. I don't do it often. I haven't done it in a while. I'll go to a playground and slide down. Sir, get off the playground. I got one more slide down. I really love that moment.
Yeah, no, sliding is great. The annual bar crawl that my friends and I do in Minneapolis, I haven't been on in a couple of years, but it was a tradition that we found a route between one of the bars that includes a little slide, and
yeah.
A bunch of adults slide down, and it has a real vibe like Wrecker. Yeah. I love him sliding down backwards. That was great.
Yeah.
And in that same moment, we had some great bickering. Mm-hmm. Where Echo says, "I didn't think you meant we'd be escaping through the engine." And Tech says, "I could not have been clearer." Just funny by itself, but I know as many fans have pointed out and many fans have enjoyed, there is this really great back and forth between Echo and Tech in particular, because it seems like their skill sets do overlap a little bit and they kind of got to work together. And they go back and forth about who should provide who with the maximum amount of information and who should have said what when.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's one of the fun relationships. And I think we're all waiting. I know you specifically have mentioned a few times, they're just waiting for a real, real heavy Echo episode. And anytime they're using them, even the stuff with Hunter, the connection with Rex and this kind of Cold War brewing between Tech and Echo, it's effective when they use it.
Yeah, well, and his Scomp Link arm is clearly an MVP of all of their missions. Couple other Tech moments for me. I just wanted to highlight that actual line that he says to Omega when she asks what was the war like, and he says it was a primary mission objective comprised of battles of various fronts.
Yeah,
it's so great, and it's so of the character. It's very, very funny. But I love that little bit of follow up of like, no, that's what it was. I'm not joking with you. That's what I mean. That's how I see things.
Yeah, no, we've talked about Tech a lot. This is such the poignancy that you get from this moment that we discussed earlier. It's just it continues to impress me what they're doing with Tech. I don't necessarily know if Tech he has echoes of, you know, kind of neurodivergent. Right. And I think there's never a punchline at his expense. There's never, everything is so him and so effective. And the humor just comes from the moment and his point of view. It's the development of Tech in this show versus even just the Clone Wars season seven stuff is just really impresses me. And I know Tech's one of your favorites. I just love everything about what they're doing with the character.
Yeah, and I think this line was a highlight of something we've talked before of when you're constructing a joke, you know, there's always contrast. That's my main opinion of what comedy is all comedy comes from some kind of contrast. Sometimes the setup line is literal and we can hear it, and sometimes it's just sort of implied by cultural norms. Mm-hmm. And when you're constructing a joke with a contrast, the contrast can sometimes be A is right and then B is funny because it's wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's not what the construct is with Tech. It's A is one thing, and then B is funny because it's just wildly different. It's not bad or wrong. It's just different.
Different, yeah.
And you get this delightful contrast of like, oh, wow, that makes perfect sense, and there's nothing wrong with it that's the way you see things, Tech, but it's funny because it's not what Omega is expecting to hear.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. Force Center joke theory episodes we're just going to do a whole series on it. it's fun to break down. It's fun. The art of comedy, the art of communicating everything through jokes is real powerful form of entertainment. Clearly, just check Netflix's comedy specials. But yeah, they're on point with Tech.
Yeah. Yeah. And one other bit of Tech comedy for me, maybe you have this one on your list too. Tech kind of does the setup and Wrecker does the knockdown, literally as well, of Tech just becoming intrigued in wanting to celebrate the engine and starting in on a Wikipedia entry of this blast primer coating is capable of withstanding Wrecker. No one cares.
Who cares?
Knocks him over. So great, and much to be discussed there about what is the value of knowledge?
Yeah.
How much should it be appreciated, and when? Who do you agree with in this instance?
Yeah, I was going to say, yes, so when is a big question about knowledge.
Exactly. Any other moments for you?
Final one was actually Linda from Cad Bane. I just really do love the line, "Ain't you smart? Kids got it all figured out." I thought that was great.
Yeah, and it also does speak to, I think, this ongoing story of her being observant. That's not what Cad Bane means, but there's a little part of me as an audience member who wants to be like, shut up, Cad Bane. Totally. She does have things figured out.
No, totally. He's a bad guy.
Not this, but later. In terms of this contrast you were talking about that makes Star Wars feel like Star Wars, where there's almost always room for whimsy, even when things are dark and horrible. Wow. Utter tension between the standoff between Cad Bane and Hunter and the, oh no, can Hunter handle this? And oh no, Hunter's been shot. Is he going to be okay? And injected right in there is Cad Bane's droid, Toto 360. Oh, my booster.
Yeah.
It is in the midst of the horror of Hunter just got shot. The immediate thing you hear is a wacky droid line.
This might have been the episode where I developed a more positive love for Toto. I didn't have a negative. I just had kind of almost a neutral opinion, right? For me personally, and this great beats. I know Seth Green voices them and everything, but it great beats in this episode with Toto.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's dive into then moments. I'm sorry. Did you have any more moments of whimsy?
No, I didn't. No more laughing.
No more laughing. Let's get serious, Ken.
Yes.
We're going to go into canon lore connections. So a big one is, you know, Cad Bane and Toto 360. I kind of shared a little bit of my thoughts about the great connection to the way he's set up in the Clone Wars is a bounty hunter to truly be feared, a bounty hunter who can take it to Jedi and really, really paid off in this episode for longtime fans of feeling the weight of like, oh, he's not Dengar or Bosk or somebody we don't know. He is frightening. How did you feel about him coming back? Were you excited? What were your emotional reactions?
Yeah, I've over the years have really grown to love Cad Bane. And it's interesting for myself to remember back when I first saw him. And as I've said before and even written before, I still think on paper, Cad Bane shouldn't have worked as well as he did, but they knew what they were doing. And what I mean by that is the design, I'm going back to Clone Wars, when you actually first see him in the broadcast order, it's one of the best episodes. We'll die, what do we call it? Die Hard in Space is what we kind of talked about in Clone Wars Report.
Yeah.
When you see him, and this is me, like an older generation, sometimes gets grumpy about how characters look in Star Wars, that mythical, is it Star Wars E or Star Wars enough? The hat, the gun, the duster. Oh, he's a cowboy. And I'm someone who loves playing just silly, you know, surface level versions of the West on video games and everything. I'm there for that. I love Young Guns and Tombstone. I'm there for that kind of stuff. But I just don't know. I didn't know if I wanted it in Star Wars. And Cad Bane works. Coming back to this episode, I had this thought, Joseph. I was like, if you're not super familiar and you're just a Disney Plus subscriber, you liked that Mando Baby Yoda show, and now you're taking this in and you're enjoying it so far, and then Clint Eastwood shows up. Does it work for you? And I think the answer is going to be probably yes, because it worked in the Clone Wars. They know what they're doing with this character. It's a little bit of a redesign, which I actually really liked. But the music, more than any other time in Cad Bane's career, is over the top. The fingers tapping on the gun holster, like I mentioned, is over the top in a way. The toothpick, everything is played up because they're reintroducing them. I think they know there's some people being introduced them for the first time. At the end of the day, it all really worked for me because I was super familiar with this guy and I cheered in my heart. It was early in the house. I cheered and I was excited, but I'm really looking at the moment. I'd love to hear from Star Wars in-depth fans who aren't counting down until Cad Bane returns, who are now like, why is Clint Eastwood here? I'd love to get their takes on it.
Yeah. And, I was so thrilled to hear the voice. Like, I loved the tease in the middle of the episode of like with the discussion between the Kaminoans of, well, we've already got people looking for it. Like, well, we can send out more. And then, you know, the rest of the episode was exciting enough that I didn't have that moment to do the drop down of like which bounty hunters might show up. So I had that great thrill when, oh, yeah, of course, here we go. And then I was so invested in just what was happening, I didn't track the toothpick until the second episode, that was, or the second right. viewing. And I was like, okay, see, Crosshair's got the toothpick. I'm waiting to see if Cad Bane's going full toothpick.
Yeah.
And I wonder if people who didn't know, he was the original toothpick guy, or like, everybody who hates him likes toothpicks. Might be distracted, yeah. but I don't know. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Be careful of going full toothpick, kids. Be
yeah, careful. Yeah. And I agree with you about the music. I think it is phenomenal throughout. And, mm-hmm. and like so many episodes, just showing that great range of moods and tones and styles. But I'm kind of with you that maybe that it was pushed to super clearly Western mm-hmm. To really reintroduce Cad Bane. And it's that one bit of like little trill that is from mm-hmm. actual Westerns, but then it has also been used in everything from like commercials.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, about what is it? The commercial I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, I know exactly the one you're talking about. I can't remember, but yeah, anything could be, but detergent. It pops up, you know?
Yeah. It's a sound that's so connected to Westerns that it is used now to parody Westerns and to parody standoffs.
Yes, that's it. You know, is Mom versus the Laundry, Dad versus Domino's Pizza. Yeah, it pops up anywhere. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. You mentioned this already, the Clone Wars arc that was going to be about getting young Boba Fett, voiced by Daniel Logan, in the armor mm-hmm. and kind of having him learn the true ropes, what it truly means to be an actual bounty hunter from Cad Bane. So I went and did a little bit of research on that because I wanted to talk about what could be next, and I wanted to make sure that we were doing it from a place of some amount of knowledge. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to read this Wikipedia summary.
Please.
Of what it was.
Everyone cares. Go for it.
It says, before the cancellation of the Clone Wars TV series, Cad Bane was set to make an appearance during a 4-episode arc starring him and Boba Fett. The two were going to team up for a rescue mission on Tatooine. Rescue mission is in quotations marks, because I think that was a question of between them of whether it was a rescue mission. But they were going to team up for a rescue mission on Tatooine, where Tusken Raiders had kidnapped a child. It would emphasize Boba's and Cad's relation to one another, as Cad had known Jango. Cad Bane would also get new clothes and a new ship called the Justifier. Mm. In a clip revealed during the animated Origins and Unexpected Fates panel at Celebration Orlando in 2017, Cad Bane and other bounty hunters had ended an insurrection by Fett. To finish it, they engaged in a standoff duel where the younger mercenary got his helmet dented. Mm. So, if you want to check that out, that video is very easy to find. Just Google Animated Origins and Unexpected Fates, and then it's right at the end of the panel, somewhere around a minute 46, that they play the clip that's being described there. It's pretty great. It's, you know, obviously kind of the early animatic, but it's got Cad and Boba standing off. You got Bosk, you got Embo. It's just glorious. Mm-hmm. And then what happens in this shot is it's very, very similar to the way that Hunter and Cad Bane's standoff, their duel, is shot mm-hmm. and framed, and even I think some similar temp music. But Cad Bane and Boba both shoot. Cad Bane goes down. Boba Fett goes down. You see the smoking dent in his mm-hmm. helmet of how he got the dent. So Cad Bane goes down in the clip, and then in this interview, this panel, the host tries to ask Dave Filoni repeatedly, so what happened to Cad Bane? It looks like he got shot. What happened to him? And Dave Filoni is his normal cheeky, fun self, like he is at conventions with things like this, and said like, oh, yeah, it's too bad that we're out of time for the panel. I guess we'll just never know. So part of the reason, Ken, that I want to go down that long rabbit hole of Cad Bane research is, as of right now, we know that there had been ideas of what Cad Bane's fate can be.
Right.
Not confirmed by Dave Filoni, but know that he has some thoughts.
Yeah.
What I'm wondering is that going to be incorporated into the Bad Batch, and will it work? Obviously not the 4-episode arc with a whole different story on Tatooine, but it did occur to me that since the Kaminoans have sent multiple bounty hunters, that we could be getting a story of, Cad Bane's got her and other bounty hunters are vying for her. We've already seen Fennec Shand. Fennec Shand seemed to make a vow of like, this is not over for me.
Right.
Fennec Shand seemed personally invested. But then just canon-wise, you know, we got Book of Boba Fett coming up. We got that unfinished thread of young Boba putting on the armor. And, you know, Cad Bane is not anywhere in canon yet. So after this moment, this is now his latest appearance in canon, the canon timeline. So there is a real opportunity for Cad Bane to die and for Boba Fett to truly take the mantle of. This is one of the reasons that people think Boba Fett is the baddest bounty hunter ever in this upcoming era, is because he killed the previous baddest bounty hunter ever.
I mean, you're describing exactly how to book a good wrestling program, a good wrestling match of someone putting over the next star. You're selling me on this idea that I don't know if you're specifically suggesting or daydreaming about this ending up in the Bad Batch.
I think there's possibility of it fitting,
right?
Because if the Bad Batch is kind of involved in it as well, and it's not just for me, like, oh yeah, hey, you know what? I love Tara Sanube, so he should show up. He survived Order 66. I'd love that. But this makes sense from a couple perspectives, because character-wise, because it's another clone who is different, right? Boba Fett. So him interacting with Omega or the Bad Batch is interesting. Fennec Shand is eventually going to have a relationship with Boba Fett, and Book of Boba Fett is coming up. I know production timeline wise, this is way ahead of that, but you never know how they might have found some synergy, planned or unplanned. But from the audience perspective, this is coming up. So there's some threads. I think because it would hinge on Omega, and because the Bad Batch might be around to have a discussion about what it means to be different kinds of clones, it makes it feel not like just a random other thread of Clone Wars stuck in here.
No, the kidnapping angle, that's pretty crazy. And Filoni, among many things that he's great at, just that's the internet. Him going, now I have an opportunity to redo something. And this is not one of these, stomping on a book or a comic and getting a lot of hate YouTube videos about or anything like that. Like, this is that thing I had. It's not unlike the coal miner car chase in Temple of Doom, which was left over from the Raiders draft from J.J. Abrams going, remember that we dived into the ruins of the Death Star? It's just got that vibe of, look, we can go back. How do we make that work for this show? And a lot of people are Omega and Boba Fett. There's a little bit of I've already seen some of those kind of speculations or theories. Right. Are they connected or just? So you're actually pitching a really interesting idea to me, Joseph, that I would not have thought to be on board with.
And now, but you're on board with the incredibly wild Boba Fett speculation.
Yeah, and I do think I made the passing reference to pro wrestling, but that's how you tell those kind of stories. And I think for Boba Fett, I that really works. Taking out this Western, I called it Cad Bane's Western Bonanza Showdown theme, taking that, putting all that together, and Boba Fett gets a lesson, but also comes out on top as the new baddie in the galaxy, and everyone bows down to him. That makes a lot of sense to me. So
yeah, and I say this as somebody who loves Cad Bane. I think he's great, but I think one of the great things about Star Wars is you can tell a million Cad Bane stories. It doesn't matter. Boba Fett could shoot him twice in the heart. Mm-hmm. Yeah. However many hearts Duros have, he could shoot him in every organ twice and tell this great Boba Fett story. And then they could announce a Cad Bane movie, because that's the way timelines work in Star Wars. So it's not like I want to be done with the character or don't like the character. I just think it's okay for characters to have definitive endpoints in their timeline, especially when they serve the larger story.
It'd be such a great way to use Cad Bane and to use his death to tell the overall story. It would really, really work. Again, to the point of, let me pull back and just not expect it too strongly.
This is definitely a... every speculation I have is a chance to practice letting go. And if it doesn't happen, I'll go, that's fine. I'll enjoy the story that they're telling me. The other thing about it, and then I'll let this go, is there's been so much great storytelling where this is absolutely about the Bad Batch and Omega. It's really focused. But through their adventures, we're seeing all these snippets of what the galaxy is going through as it immediately transitions into the Empire. And I think one of those things is criminal syndicates and bounty hunters learning, like, oh, it's a bonanza now.
Yeah.
That the Empire is going to look the other way and they're going to hire us to do all sorts of stuff. So having a little bit of a story that's a scramble for the bounty hunters to prove their worth in this new regime, this new era, is interesting and kind of makes sense too.
I love it. Yeah, no, I didn't expect the Bad Batch. We knew Fennec was coming, so I think there were some conversations, but I didn't expect the Bad Batch to go as deep as it has already gone into kind of the underworld or bounty hunters or smuggling or any of those kind of things. And so it seems like a natural fit at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And also just like the number of characters we know that we're seeing again, you know, from Trace and Rafa to Cut to Rex, all making sense so far, and seeing if we can't continue that thread.
It is the great come back in here, you're in the show now kind of vibe every week, which sometimes is criticized. So far, for me, it's working. I can understand why they can maybe get tiresome for some folks who want new things all the time, but this is very much of that era, so it's all tracking for me.
Yeah. The other canon things for me are all small little details, but I wanted to see if you had any canon lore connections you wanted to discuss.
Same. I mean, the connection of the Clone Wars stuff, obviously very present. We're only months removed, but the Omega moment we talked about really connected to just, again, my own personal memories. It was like my own highlight reel of favorite Clone Wars moments was playing, and Omega doesn't even know those ones. The little one for me, and then I'll kick it back to you, the proton torpedoes ones, you mentioned it. That connects to my childhood. That is one of the first terms of Star Wars that I learned. It's very prevalent. It's in the movie, New Hope. It's all over. But that is one of the ones that I carried to the playground that I remembered. Oh, proton torpedoes are those things on the X-Wing. And I just kind of enjoyed Wrecker being like, proton torpedoes, because I feel like that, too.
Yes, that just that childlike glee at big space missiles is absolutely space torpedoes is absolutely felt over here as well. A thing that was nice and clear, people picked up on it last week, but it was fun to see a little bit more close up, is the scrappers on Braca having very similar poncho to Cal Kestis from Jedi Fallen Order, continuing the great poncho love in the galaxy.
A lot there.
It was fun that establishing a shot of Kamino was so beautiful. The second time we went to Kamino and seeing those V-wings buzz like TIE fighters was just like a good visual little like, yep, the machinery of the Republic is already feeling like the machinery of the Empire.
Great moment. Glad you pointed that out.
Then the artillery room features prominently in Revenge of the Sith, the Battle of Coruscant. So that was great to see. It pops up in Clone Wars too, but I remember that because in my trivia studying, that's where the Wilhelm scream is in Revenge of the Sith. It's a tragedy in the artillery room. Last one for me is just a fun detail that popped for me on second viewing when I was still emotionally invested, but wasn't the first time, is that reveal that the clones are all down where Cad Bane is, and they're calling for a clone and using the handle, the CT-8508, do you copy? Just driving home that Imperial clones don't use names anymore. Yeah. And I love that they're continuing that story, that it isn't just like Order 66 happened and now they just want to kill Jedi. Like, their personalities are changed. Their individuality is gone.
It's run all through the show, and it's a good moment. And then just it worked also as that was the moment I was like, uh-oh, someone's here.
Yep. Somebody, a bounty hunter's coming. Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought it was going to be Dengar, which is why I shouldn't write these shows.
Which would have been a little bit embarrassing for Crosshair, because he looked a little bit like Dengar when he was all bandaged up.
Yes, he did.
All right. Anything you disliked or questioned in this episode?
To highlight again, I put Cad Bane's music here. I'm not disliking it. I'm not even questioning it. It stood out in such a way. I want a track of it already. I'll play it while I work out. It was wonderful. But even when like he stuns Omega and like the little theme plays, I was like, man, did that undercut the moment? I don't think it did, but I paused for a second. So I just, the fact that they really leaned into it, I don't have a problem with it, but it just stood out in such a way that I want to test the temperature of the fandom and see if there was anyone that didn't like it and maybe has an issue with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a really big choice to say, let's make this Western, you know, duel connections to samurai duels and the way it's shot as well. Obviously the Westerns are speaking, the samurai movies and Western movies are speaking to each other in moments like this. So it was really, really strongly that, even down to like going in hard on the close up of the eyes, which is, you know, different when it's a Duros in a clone with a helmet on. But I think I did wonder about, I enjoyed this moment. I had no hesitation in this moment because I was so invested in the characters and the stakes for the characters.
Yeah.
But Star Wars has worn its love of Westerns on its sleeve a lot in, or these kind of Western slash samurai moments a lot lately, right? There are many moments like this in The Mandalorian. The great framing of the shot in Solo when Enfys Nest and the Cloud Riders show up, right?
Yeah.
On Saverine. Like this kind of moment of the hand floating over the holster to various degrees has really been highlighted a lot lately in Star Wars. So I'm curious to see if there are new approaches on it.
Yeah.
So it remains, you know, effective.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious to see, like I said, test the temperature. But again, I love it because I love Cad Bane. But I go back to the first moment back in Clone Wars when he pops up at the end of season one on the broadcast order. I just remember going, what? He's got a floppy cat. Outlaw Josie Wales. What's going on here? Shortly after the end of the episode, I'm on board. So I think maybe the same thing happened.
Yeah. It all works. Yeah. I think I was, this did not, this was not a dislike. This was a question. Like this was like, I had to pick it up and go, does this hurt? does this bother me? I got to see. I'm going to prick my finger with it and go, does that bother me? There is a similarity to Mandalorian that is pretty undeniable, right? Just emotionally that this is a story of instead of one rugged warrior adopting a young child, this is a story of a group of very different rugged warriors adopting a child. And that's we've talked about that. It's Star Wars. It's coming of age. It's we've enjoyed the differences. But now that we're getting to this point of, well, when you're telling that story of a rugged warrior trying to raise and train and protect a young child, what's the worst thing that could happen? They could lose the child. But we have in Star Wars very recently gone through this beat, and there's also the similarity of Omega and Grogu were kind of both taken back to a facility to be used for some level of dark science.
Right.
You know, the baddies want them back because they're valuable genetically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there are a lot of similarities, but I pricked my finger and I was just like, yeah, but the differences are so much that I don't care. I'm invested in these characters. I acknowledge the similarity, but it's not taking me out of the show.
Yeah, no, it's very present, like you said, and I think the Grogu one affected me in a different way, and it's just because I'm invested in the story differently, a unique experience for both. And I'm with you too. That's a good way. You take a little prick your finger and see how much it bleeds. And I'm with you. It didn't bleed much for me.
Yeah, I think the differences are large enough. The tone changes are large enough. You know, Omega and Grogu are, you know, very different characters with very different perspectives. You know, that all that stuff does add up to say, yeah, it's similar if you just outline it as beats. But once you add in all the characters and the humanity and the specificity of the situation, they remain their own, to me, great stories.
Very much so.
All right. You have hopes for the next episode, Ken?
The party has really begun. And now we've got tracking down Omega. We got Bounty Hunter showing up. Crosshair's pissed off and wants revenge. I think a lot of things going, and I feel by episode 10 or 11 that you will we'll be maybe moving at a faster pace. Not that the show's moving slow, but just like, welcome to the party, pals. We're picking up.
Yeah, and the chase is exactly the right word. The chase is on. We're reaching that potential Blues Brothers level of like other bounty hunters after Cad Bane and Omega. Crosshair wants to prove himself. Bad Batch is after. Maybe Bad Batch calls in some help.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a couple hopes for me. I really like how much they've been picking up directly off of episodes. I was really thrilled that, we haven't left Braca yet. It's a direct continuation of them being spotted on Braca. So there's a part of me that's like, I would love to see it continue real directly. I would love to see a little bit of Omega trying to escape Cad Bane or interacting with Cad Bane and trying to figure him out. I would love to see just a little bit of them in the ship together.
Oh, that'd be great.
And then my other big question that I want to pitch to you, Ken, since there are some storytelling similarities that do happen, do you think, like Mandalorian, the Bad Batch is going to go look for help in tracking Cad Bane down? Is it going to be they're going to go get the team together? Or do you think the next episode Bad Batch is just screaming after Cad Bane themselves?
I think screaming after Cad Bane themselves, but learning that they're going to need some help.
Yeah,
that sounds like a very political answer.
Yes. No, but I think that is a difference between there. If they're like, we can't track him, but we know somebody who can kind of thing is the next episode. Or else it's just like, get in the ship, go.
Yeah. I'm saying yes, unless you need it to be no.
Yes, I'm. That's a very familiar sentence to me, coming from the Midwest. That can sometimes have very specific negotiations. I've said that sentence about pizza toppings many times. Yes, unless you need it to be no. And then final thing for me, my hopes for the next episode or ongoing continue to be how long till Hondo?
Yes, the Hondo countdown. It's
Yep. Yep, it didn't make sense, but for just a second when we were starting in on Cad Bane, like, oh, is that gonna be Hondo? Nope, Cad Bane, much better, much better. Anything that we have not talked about that you wanted to touch on?
No, what a full fun episode! Like I said, instant classic is I don't think that's hyperbole. It's gonna stand the test of time.
Absolutely, absolutely important to the story, and just has a lot of big joys of its own between the action and the comedy and the depth. It's just fun to watch. Mm-hmm. So this is a great episode in our opinion. So we are going to wrap up as we always do with this question of fun. Ken, if you could have a figure of any character or a toy inspired by this episode, who or what do you want?
Oh, you touched upon it earlier. I've already seen out in the fandom sphere this being discussed, but we need Head Wrap Crosshair. 6-inch Black Series variant, whatever, Target, Walmart, Walgreens exclusive, I don't care. Galaxy's Edge exclusive, Head Wrap Crosshair.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. I think I need a whole set of Bad Batch in 3 3/4 vintage. First, I just need them because they're not available yet. And then I need battle damaged of all of them. And you can take their helmets off and they have their bandages over their inhibitor chip removal, and a full Dengar version of Crosshair would be great.
Be great.
Here's an outside of the box one for me. There's great Cad Bane action figure from Clone Wars from that era, but I would like a new Cad Bane action figure. It's 3 3/4, but the accessories that Cad Bane comes with are, of course, the cool blasters and Toto 360. But then Cad Bane also comes with a life-size Cad Bane toothpick that you can chew on while playing with your Cad Bane action
figure. We absolutely need that. Absolutely need that. Yep. There for them.
Absolutely. Cad Bane with toothpick would make me very, very happy. With that, Ken, do you want to tell people where they can find us?
I would love to. We have the Force Center podcast feed. We can be found on Twitter at Force Center Pod or on Instagram and YouTube as well. You can also find us on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. You can get an audio book on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. And you can get some merch if you want at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. Also, you podcasts available a lot of different spots, including Anchor, where we're housed, and Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify, where there's some new stuff coming, some features and stuff rolling out. We might start using some of it for Force Center. Stick around for that. And then also you can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. We should point out that if you join us and support at the top tier, you get a exclusive set of collector trading cards of me, Joseph, and Jennifer Landa, designed by the great Brian Ward. We got a couple new supporters at that level, Brennan and Michael, and you're getting cards very soon. So do that. You can also follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, KenNapsok.com. Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, at Joseph Scrimshaw. And you can check out all of my other comedy adventures on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for the quick draw of Cad Bane, this has been the Bad Batch Report.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.